The words and the deeds of Jesus have one purpose and one purpose only. And that is to elicit faith that the preaching that Jesus does and the miracles that Jesus does are meant to be invitations to faith. St. John, in his Gospel, organizes it in two books. The first part of the Gospel, the largest part, is called the Book of Signs, and the latter part of the Gospel is called the Book of Glory. And in the Book of Signs, the author describes seven miracles that Jesus worked. Each one of them an invitation to faith, beginning with the changing of the water and the wine at the marriage feast at Cana, and then the curing of the centurion's son, and then the multiplication of the loaves and fishes and the walking on the water, the opening of the eyes of the blind man, ultimately the curing or the raising of Lazarus from the dead. And each one of those miracles, each one of those signs, becomes more intensive and stronger as it goes. And the invitation to faith becomes more critical. It's amazing to me that people could have seen that and not having believed in him, in his word. I mean, how do you watch a person who is dead be brought to life and not having that affect you very deeply? And this isn't the first time Jesus has raised a dead person to life. He did that with the daughter of Jairus, the chief of the synagogue. He did that with the son of the widow of Nain. As Jesus is walking into the city, he sees the dead son being carried out in the funeral procession and the weeping mother, the widow of Nain, and he stops and he raises the boy to life. So this is not the only such instance, and there may have been many others as well. But clearly some people did believe, and clearly others did not. I would suggest that there are many, many, many lessons that can be drawn out of this gospel story. It's very rich. But I would suggest to you that this morning we look at the lesson that is present at the very end of the story. 6 years ago today, I was in the city of Rome and attended Mass on a church that was 300 or 400 years old, just outside of the Vatican on the Via Consolazione. It was a Carmelite church. Inside the church, there's a large shrine to Our Lady of Mount Carmel. It's a parish church of the city. It's a church not unlike St. Matthew's in terms of congregation. Older persons, younger persons, families, single people, adults, children. Stephen, Mike, and I were spending 2 weeks in Rome, and we went at 10 o'clock on Sunday morning to Mass there. I remember sitting in my place on the bench, and there being a 4-year-old who spent most of the Mass untying my shoes. Right in front of me, there was a young woman, probably in her 20s, maybe 30s, and she had escorted an elderly woman, I would assume perhaps her grandmother, who clearly was suffering from some advancing dementia, had welcomed her and had brought her to Mass. So it was a very, very, very diverse congregation, and kind of noisy as an Italian congregation would tend to be. But after the Gospel, the priest who was celebrating Mass, he asked for a blackboard. And they wheeled out a blackboard into the middle aisle of the church one of those large freestanding blackboards. And in the front rows were young people. The front three or four rows were young people, elementary grades and perhaps middle school and upper grade students. I think they probably were the religious education students of the parish. And he began to outline once again the story, and to write on the blackboard the key elements of the story. And then he came to the end of the story, and he reminded all of us, the young people as well as adults, that the story was about liberation, and the story was about freedom. All of the miracles of Jesus are about freedom. Freedom from sin, freedom from the limitation of the effects of sin. And that the heart of the story is that the stone gets rolled away, and Jesus calls this man out of darkness. The tomb is the symbol of darkness and being constrained, being unfree. And the man comes out, and the man is bound. He has tied. He has linen wrappings that hold him in, that don't allow him to be free. Linen wrappings that are symbolic of the slavery in which the man finds himself. And Jesus not only calls the man out of the tomb, but he demands that the man be untied. He demands that the man be set free. And they untie him. They take those winding cloths off him, those strips of linen, so that he can be free. And then the pastor of this Italian parish church, he said to the young people, and he said to the adults, all of us gathered, he said, "Now, what is the winding strip that keeps you tight? The winding strip that keeps you imprisoned? The winding strip that prevents you from being free?" Now, he didn't ask it as a rhetorical question. He continued to ask that question until people stood up and answered it. I remember one girl stood up, one of the young people stood up and talked about her stubbornness and her unwillingness to listen to her teachers and her parents, and that was something that bound her. And there was a gentleman who stood up and talked about or mentioned his jealousy of others because of their success and his not having that success. And there was one person who talked about illness and the resentment that this person held about a certain illness that person or a member of family was experiencing. Anyway, people talked about, gave examples of what tied them up. And the challenge was that just as Lazarus was untied and set free, so that's what the Lord seeks to do in each and every one of our lives. Not only individually, but communally, because there can be communities that are tied up. There can be societies that are tied up. There can be institutions that are tied up and are not free. And what the Lord seeks to do is to free. The Lord seeks to cry out again and again, "Untie, let them be free." And the mystery of living in the grace of Christ is the mystery of liberation. It's what it is to be fully human, to be freed of the limitations of sin and the effects of sin, both personally and institutionally. Now, that freedom occurs in many, many ways. God becomes active in our lives in a freeing, liberating way. through the hands of others, through the events of time, through the circumstances of our lives. But there's a very particular way for each of us that the Lord liberates us. And that is what we do here week after week. We gather at the table of the Lord and we celebrate the mystery of Christ, the mystery of his being raised and brought out of the grave, his being set free in his humanity. And as you and I share that mystery, week after week, month after month, year after year, decade after decade, it is inconceivable that that cannot have a profound transforming effect in our lives. It is inconceivable that you and I can come week after week, month after month, year after year, decade after decade, and walk deeply in the mystery of Christ and have that not be transformative. It doesn't happen overnight. The freedom occurs bit by bit, week by week, year by year. And then what happens? Then you and I are able to say, along with the Apostle Paul, it is now not I who live, but it is Christ who lives in me. That's the invitation. And I would suggest that's one of many, many lessons that we could draw today from the story of Lazarus.